I was this morning to the book of Romans. Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8, beginning in verse 15. And I don't know how old Church in the Wildwood is. I don't know how old How Great Thou Art is. I know that this sermon is 7 years old. I first preached this sermon about a year after we got home from China. And as we come up here, believe it or not, it's difficult for me to believe that in 6 days, this coming Saturday, Tenzi will be 9 years old. Seems like just a few days ago, July the 22nd of 2005, that we were standing in a little dingy, dark, I'm not even sure I have good adjectives to describe the room at the Chinese Center for Adoption Affairs when three little broke-down ladies come walking in and handed us Ho Jiao Ting, which was her name at the time. And so as they handed us that little cigarette, which is what she smelled like, Rhonda promptly took her home and or took her back to the hotel and threw away the clothes that she had on and scrubbed her. And it may have very well been her first bath ever based on the screaming that she did. Matter of fact, that was the only real noise we got out of her other than poop. And just like every other kid in the world, we was wondering if she'd ever talk. Now we wonder if she'll ever hush. And so, that was the experience in that little room. Actually, I gave you the wrong date. July the 22nd was when we signed papers to begin the process. August the 30th was when they actually handed her over to us. And like I said, this coming Saturday, that little cigarette will be 9 years old. And I can still see her sitting there on the bed. The only thing that really brought her much comfort was her little Chinese communist identification badge that hung around her neck, and she would chew on it. And that was before she discovered ramen noodles. And so she doesn't chew on her name badge anymore. She comes on the way home from school. She gets in the car and says, "Daddy, will you fix me noodles when we get home?" I didn't know I had a choice. You know, I've thought about just going ahead when I leave the house to go get her, just go ahead and start them cooking, and that way they'll be ready when she walks in. And so, I preached this message again, it's a form of it anyway, about 7 years ago now, just share with you how the adoption process had transformed, and not only so much transformed, but really opened my eyes and enlightened and helped me to understand and appreciate even more what God has done for me. And I hope as you kind of hear the story this morning, consider the comparison, the parallel, that you'll understand how wonderful it is, how awesome it is to be adopted into the family of God. In Romans chapter 8, verse 15, Paul writes there, he says you don't have the spirit of bondage, he says, but you've received the spirit of adoption whereby you cry, Abba, Father. And as I look at that verse, that verse really, I think with Tenzi in particular, really drove home to me the adoption story and the value of my relationship of what God did for me through Jesus Christ. Because I see that verse and where Paul starts out by saying, you don't have the spirit of bondage. I don't know, and many of you may already know this. Some of you have heard me talk about this before, and because, again, it just really has impacted our life, obviously, by adding another mouth to feed, but by what it how it helped me as I thought about this idea of adoption and being part of the family of God. Just because I'm not sure what everybody knows, and to get us all on the same page, I'm not sure if you're aware of what goes on in China. China has a very strict one-child policy. In other words, you are only allowed one child. In most cases, there are a few exceptions to the rule, but the majority are only allowed one child. And so what happens is, if a child is born with any form, mild or otherwise, birth defect, those Sometimes children are abandoned. They are taken and set beside the road somewhere, and they are discarded. And many of them end up ultimately not surviving at all, and at best in a foster home in China. In fact, the folks that clean our church now are actually, they have moved to Texas. They have adopted two sons who many, for some reason I don't know, but they say many of the Chinese children are born deaf. And so they've adopted two teenage boys, and they have moved to Texas to get them in the Texas School for the Deaf. And so if they have any sign of handicap, they are discarded. One of the other things is if they are a girl, healthy or otherwise, they are discarded. They don't want a girl. They want to have a boy to carry on the family name. So they will set the girl aside. In fact, Tenzi was found beside of a school building. And they do say that in many cases they set them out near police stations, schools, other places where they will be found. They're not just discarded completely, but typically set out where they will be found. And similar to the story of Moses, they are put, generally somebody will stay near, a sister, brother, somebody will stay near to make sure that that child is actually discovered and taken in. But once they are taken in, there is a documentary done, some research done, a video done by National Geographic that showed that even once many of these children end up discovered and taken to orphanages, that many of them are abused, and many of them they're not likely to live very long. The particular video that was put out showed many of the little girls that were placed in orphanages that from the time they would wake up in the morning until the time they laid down to go to sleep at night, they would be tied to potty chairs, and many of them were left with permanent scars and injuries from being bound in such a way. And even if they are treated otherwise, one of the things that does give us some comfort and some peace is based on the reports, the paperwork we got ahead of time on Tenzi, and then meeting the ladies who brought her to us. It was pretty obvious that she was the brat of the orphanage, that she was her caretaker's pet. So I feel like she was treated above average, and so that gives us some peace. But I think about all those orphans who are still in bondage and are trapped, and are in many cases they are pretty much the outcast of society. They are in a situation. For example, I told you that Tenzi's name in China was Ho Jiao Ting. The reason it was Ho was because she was in a city named Juzhou, and so they give them the last few letters of the city they're in as their name. They don't even really earn a name. They just kind of pick up the name of the city, and so they are in bondage. And then through the grace of God, again, just to get you all, everybody on the same page. I don't know, again, some of you may remember the story. One afternoon, Rhonda came home from work. And when she came in, it was obvious it hadn't been a good day. And she starts slinging pots and pans and crying and trying to cook supper. And I didn't know what I did. You know what I'm talking about. I didn't know what I did, but I figured it was my fault. Georgiana just looked at you all. She's just seeing how you would react to that statement. I didn't know what I was guilty of, but I knew she was unhappy, and I figured whether I did it or not, if Mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. And so I set in the motion to get this problem solved. I said, just forget cooking. Don't worry about supper. We'll go eat. And one thing I know about Rhonda, if you want to get on her good side, if you take her to Red Lobster, Olive Garden, either one, not necessarily in that order, and you're on the right path. And so we went over and we ate, and we started back, and we had the radio station on. There was a lady on there who was talking about her and her husband, their adoption of a child from China. Now, she wasn't promoting adoption. She wasn't saying everyone should go adopt, and I'm not saying that today. I'm not at all. If God leads you, go. If he doesn't, don't go. That's all I know to tell you. But she was really talking about faith.
because she had been through a major struggle to try to get everything lined up. They had to refinance their house. The appraisal had to come in way above what the house was really worth to be able to get enough money to go and all this. And she was really just talking about all the mountains that God had moved to get this to happen for them to be able to adopt. So she wasn't promoting adoption, but we were just slightly off of the ramp coming back off Concord Mills, headed up 85. And I looked at Rhonda and I said, we can do that. And I thought she was going to get out of the car and shove me out. I'm not sure which one. Again, remember, we already had three kids. And if you've heard me, I've said more than once, I don't want nothing else that eats or breathes coming to my house. And so we were done. That was, if I'm not mistaken, that was on, I believe that was on a Tuesday. On Friday, I met Rhonda for lunch up at firehouse up here, and we sit down, and she gets all teary-eyed again. Well, I had the same reaction. What'd I do? The way I thought things were going. I was just, after all these years, I'm kind of used to that. I mean, so they admit, she's crying, I'm guilty, by association, if nothing else. And she looked at me, and she said, have you checked on that adoption? Have you checked on that adoption? Well, hey, I'm going to tell you something. One of the things going on in China, just while I'm there, because that was part of what I was going to tell you, is because of that rule, many of the children are not abandoned. When the woman comes up pregnant, they are forcefully aborted and not in doctor's offices. And many women and children are dying because of this one-child policy. She said, have you checked on the adoption? And I said, no, you told me not to. And I said, but you hadn't stopped thinking about it, have you? And so she said, no. And so on July the 22nd, 2004, we're signing papers roughly 2 months before Tenzi is even born to go and to bring her back here. And over those, I first shared these thoughts with you over 7 years ago. After 7 more years of thinking and the process, the whole thing developing in my mind, this whole idea of adoption. I'm reminded, go back to this passage, where Paul says we have the spirit of adoption. And I think about how over and over the Word of God says we are His children, describes us as His Father, how He has adopted us and taken us in to His family. And so this morning I want to share with you 5 things that I learned over these last 8 years in dealing and going through this process of that has kind of helped for me to fine-tune, to hone in, if you will, my understanding of what it means, of the great privilege I have of being adopted into the family of God. And so as I compare, I think about parallels here between our adoption and my adoption. It just, again, helps me and causes me just, again, just a clarity of thought and appreciation that I honestly don't think that I had before these events, before we went to China. I don't think I had that kind of understanding before. And so that's one of the many benefits that have come out of the adoption. I've told people, you've probably heard me say this, if I would have known they made them so good in China, I would have just skipped having our 3 and went and got them all from China. We've discussed that one day when Tenzi gets a little older, we're going to have Made in China tattooed on the bottom of her foot. Just amazing how, to me, how it has helped me in understanding and this whole adoption, what God has done for me. And as I think about it, all begins with one simple statement, and that is the problem. When we look at this and think about what it says, 4 lessons should be 5. When we think back about the whole situation, there is a major problem. I've already shared with you some of it. According to many reports, the mortality rate among orphans in China is somewhere around 75%. And I don't know about you, but that's mind-boggling to me. Can you imagine that anything in America, there was a mortality rate of 75%? We would have, there would be huge government studies. Matter of fact, as well as I do, if there was something going on in another country where the mortality mortality rate was 75%. Other than China, if there was something going on, the United States would be concerned about that. Look at all the millions and millions we've sent in aid to Africa for the AIDS crisis. And so 75% of the orphans, it's a more 75% mortality rate. In fact, in Shanghai, one of the wealthiest provinces in all of China, where the bulk of the money is, and China is a very unique place. I would stand in the hotel. We were staying in just some of the most luxurious hotels I've ever seen in my life that the adoption agency lined up. They were just unbelievable in all the amenities and how nice they were. And I'm standing looking out my window. Across the country. In Shanghai, one of the wealthiest provinces in China, where generally is where most of the pictures and things you see are either from Beijing or China or Shanghai. One of the things that again, they have some of the most wealth, and the mortality rate among orphans in Shanghai is estimated to be somewhere in the vicinity of 90%. 90% mortality among orphans. There is a major problem with this one-child law in China. Even the children that are surviving, they say the young boys, they have a name for them. They're calling them little emperors, because when they finally do have a boy, they're having serious health problems and weight issues, because once they finally get a boy, they are spoiling them beyond belief. There's another real problem coming along. There's a certain amount of a rape problem coming along, because if you keep getting rid of your girls, eventually you got a problem. There's nobody left for the boys to marry and carry on that family you were so worried about. And so there are a lot of issues, a lot of problems coming out of this one-child policy in China. Again, 75% mortality rate overall, 90% in Shanghai. Let me tell you what dawned on me as I thought about this. Let me tell you what the mortality rate among the people is, 100%. I got news for you. All of us are going to die. All of us are going to die. It's just that simple. And as I thought, we all have a problem. Paul says in that passage, he says, you don't have the spirit of bondage any longer. You're not bound by your sin. The Bible talks about our sin as weights and chains and those kind of things. And what we see here is a problem that all of us have. Where every person that has ever been born, we sometimes underestimate, we don't value correctly the great benefit we have of being born in America. We take for granted the great privilege we have of being born in America, that we overlook sometimes that value. But whether you're born in America, greatest land, whether you're born in China under a one-child policy, here's reality. Without Jesus Christ as your personal Savior, you are in bondage. You're lost. One of the things, as I realized, as I considered over the years, the adoption, here's what dawned on me as I thought about this. It was kind of funny to watch Kenzie after we got her. And I've often wondered what English, I was sitting in a restaurant the other day and listening to two or three fellows at the table speak Spanish. And I'm thinking, how in the world do y'all know what y'all saying? And I've often wondered what English sounds like to everybody else. And I don't know what it sounds like, but I know what Kenzie looked like. Because I'm pretty well 100% sure we were the whitest folks she'd ever seen. And she'd never heard English before. All she'd ever heard was Chinese. I know we came home, we came through Newark. And that was worse than China. That's New Jersey, if y'all don't know. I'd be in China to New Jersey. But we came through and we had to wait there in the airport. And there was a Hispanic guy came down the hallway. And while we were sitting there, Tenzi just watched him. She just watched him. just all the way down the hall. She just watched him. And we finally realized, the only thing we could decide with her, she couldn't speak yet. She was only 11 months old. And if she could, it would have been Chinese. We wouldn't know what she was saying. Yeah, and we finally decided what it was he was the closest she'd seen since we left there to somebody her skin color. Yeah, and she kept watching that guy thinking, come get me from these white people. You know, that's the only thing I could figure. That's all I could decide she was looking at. Yeah, but here's what hit me as I thought, when Tenzin was sitting in that orphanage, when those children are saying, they don't know they're orphans. That's all they know. That's all they've ever known. To them, that's as good as the world gets. That's the only home. You know what most of us, we grow up, we're born, the Bible tells us we're born in sin, we're born lost, we're born with that Adam nature. We grow up, we think, like most of us, we grow up thinking, I'm all right. I'm all right. No, there's a problem. The 100% mortality rate. And without Jesus Christ, you're going to die lost. A problem. But not only is there a problem, but also, as I thought about it, there's a plan. See, long before Tenzin knew it, in fact, before she was even born, the wheels had begun to move. Again, as I told you, this all started in July of 2004. She wasn't born. We don't really know her birthday. It's estimated they take, and based on the condition of the umbilical cord when the child is found, they estimate the birthday. And they've done so much of it, they're pretty good. Based on that, they have established and set her birthday as September the 28th of 2004. And again, we started this process over 2 months before she was even born. And I don't know how to explain this to you. Again, I'm an only child. I didn't grow up around brothers and sisters, so I'm just totally in the dark. To my knowledge, I don't know if I grew up, I'm sure I did, but I don't know that I grew up, that I had any exposure to anyone who had been adopted. It just wasn't part of my radar. If it was, I don't remember it, don't know it. I had never, if you would have asked me, 9 years ago, can you adopt from China? I'd have said, I don't know. I just had never, till that night, leaving that restaurant, it had never entered my mind. But all of a sudden, on that night, on July the 22nd, we began to sign those papers, a plan came together. Now, I want to tell you, it was a plan. I say this, and some people don't like it, but I'm just going to tell you, in my opinion, I know why people sneak into our country now rather than come in the legal route, because I have dealt with immigration. I have dealt with those people, and this is on the internet, goes out for the world to hear, and I hope some of them are listening. You are the most contrary people on the face of the earth. I am American, and I know how they treated me. I can only imagine how they would treat somebody from another country. We had about 4 pages of typewritten, of checklist of things we had to go through. Money that had to be sent here, money that had to be sent here, forms that had to be filled out, background checks. I will tell you how detailed it got. We had to go, for example, and get a copy of our birth certificates among many other forms. It had to be a certified copy from the county. Then we had to get a thing from the Secretary of State of North Carolina saying that the Cabarrus County Clerk of Court actually was the Cabarrus County Clerk of Court and could give us that birth certificate. Then we had to get a thing from somebody in Washington, D.C. saying that the Secretary of State of North Carolina was actually the Secretary of State of North Carolina, and she actually had the right to say that this person was the Secretary of Clerk of Court of Cabarrus County. And it all had to have little gold seals on it. Listen, and this wasn't Chinese rules altogether. Most of this was American rules. There was, by the time they put her in our hands on that day in August of 2005, and I can still show you most of it, I had a briefcase roughly this thick that will just go closed from all the paperwork, all that had to be done. All the money that had to be sent, all the forms that had to be filled out, and all the forms that had to go back. This whole thing came about, just another example. We got the picture
And some of you have seen this picture of the little boy that Tenzi looked like in the picture. She looked like a little boy in a parka. One of the things I have discovered in China is I couldn't live there, go back to that air conditioned thing, because if you didn't watch the maid, she'd come in and say, "Too cold for baby," and turn up the air conditioner. They'd cover up you youngin'. I mean, I couldn't live over there. They like it hot. I can't stand that. Fat people don't like hot. Gravity and heat are not the fat man's friend, in case y'all didn't know. We got that picture, and you see this on TV shows. I've seen several shows that do this. When someone's adopting, they get their man, boom, they run to the airport and jump on the airplane, take off to China and get their baby. That's hilarious. That's not how it works. Tell you how it all came about. You have to get a date with the U.S. Embassy to finish the paperwork for citizenship. And I don't remember which department that is. And once you get that appointment, then they start backing up from there. Okay, you got to be here 3 days, there 5 days, there two, blah, blah, blah. And so there's this whole plan that has to come together. And then I thought about the plan that God has for us. Way back in the Garden of Eden, He looked at a serpent who would have destroyed us. Who would have destroyed man, and said, "You know what? You had a pretty good idea. But her seed, you're going to bruise his heel, but he's going to crush your head." See, as I thought about this, I wonder, one of the things that they tell us to be prepared for, and honestly, I may be wrong, but I think Tenzi is about as well adjusted as she could be growing up at my house. I think, with the grandparents she's got, and I think she's just doing wonderful. But one of the things that they tell us is that many of the Chinese children get up to a certain age, and they find out how bad things were in China, and then, if you knew it was that bad, why didn't you come get me ahead of time? Why didn't you get on over here? And so they say some have to deal with that. One of the things I thought about as I think about it is, Tenzi never, Tenzi never picked up the phone and said, "Hey, you need to come get me. You better come get me out of this order." She had no idea. She didn't have a clue. I tell people this. I don't know how it works for everybody else, but I want to tell you something. I pick on Jason about being a big old crybaby, and I'm almost as bad as he is, and I might get emotional. I'm going to tell you something. From the time this process started, again, we started 2 months before she was born. The lady who we heard give this original speech talk, she said, "My other children were conceived in my womb. My daughter from China was conceived in my heart." That is, I don't know how else to explain it to you, but from the day we started this process, I had a daughter in China. I've never seen her, and she'd never seen me. I can't explain that to you. I can tell you that there were many tears shed over that year as I worried and wondered, where is she and is she okay? See, we went through this whole process from July the 22nd of 2004 till July the 4th weekend of 2005 without knowing her name, without having seen her picture. We just knew that somewhere out there we had a daughter. But she didn't know I existed. She didn't know all the things we had planned for her. She didn't know how many of you were already praying for her. She didn't know how many of you were already giving us cash to help get her here. Didn't know how many of you were already giving us toys and clothes for her to wear and to play with. She had no idea what her father had laid out for her. She had no idea how much her father loved her. And I began to think about me. I began to think about you. You grew up a time in your life where you were separated from God. And you never picked up the phone and said, "Hey, God, come save me." The Bible says that He sent His Son while you were still lost. While you were still unlovable, He sent His Son to die on a cross for you. He had a plan from day one. It's difficult for me to comprehend. I look back now and I'll tell you something I'm not necessarily proud of, but I meant it at the time I said it. And it really upset one of the ladies at the adoption agency because this was a terrible process. I don't recommend it for anybody. I busted up in the middle of one of Robin Hayes' meetings when he was congressman. I wrote letters to the president. This was a terrible, terrible process. It was nerve-wracking. It was painstaking. It was heartbreaking. And I told one of the ladies at one point, I said, if I didn't already feel like I had a daughter, if I knew what I knew now, I would never get into this process. Because of how much grief and how much pain it caused. God knew exactly how much grief and how much pain I was going to cause him. When he spoke this world into existence, he looked through time and he saw Tommy Anderson. And he said, you know what? He's going to be a pain in my side. But I'm going to love him and send my son to die for him. He looked through time and he saw Martin Young and said, he's going to be a real nuisance. But I love him, and I'm going through with this process. He looked through time, and he saw me. And he said, you know what? He's going to be a real problem child. But I'm going to go through with the plan, even though it's going to cost me my son. I'm going through with it. The problem, the plan, but here's the thing that really gets me. The plan had a price. So I look back at the adoption, and every now and then, Caleb in particular, every now and then Caleb will remind, at the time, we were squirreling up some money. And the plan was one of two things. We were more or less going to let the kids decide, do you want to go to Disney, or do you want us to get a pool? That was the two options of the money that we'd been squirreling back. And, you know, we were thinking, you know, for us, it's going to be about the same amount. Which one do you want to do? Disney's, you know, a one-time thing. The pool will be there next summer. So which one do you want to do? Well, lo and behold, God said, do I get a vote? And he came along and, you know, down on 85 one afternoon, he said, how about this? And so, there went the pool and the Disney money, and we still don't have a pool. We still hadn't been to Disney, but we got a Chinese daughter. And so every now and then, Tenzi will get to aggravating Caleb, and Caleb will say, we could have had a pool. You know, and for the life of me, I don't remember what, the other day he pulled that stunt, and I forgot now what she said, and Tenzi looks at and says, yeah, but you wouldn't have had me. You're not going to have to something. I forget exactly. She shut him up. I remember that. Yeah, I think back, and to be perfectly honest with you, I don't remember the total price. I know probably other than my house is the most expensive thing I've ever done. I know the plane tickets were $3,000. That I remember. Because I remember this. I'll tell y'all a quick story off the side about that. When I called to order the plane tickets, it had been a while since I'd flown. By the way, Rhonda had never flown. This is the first time she'd had her little feet off the ground. You know. And the first trip she's taken is a 24-hour trip. You know. And I called the lady at the airport, the airplane, and I asked them about the tickets, and she said, what kind of tickets? And I said, ticket. I want to go to China. And she said, do you want coach or business class? Well, I didn't know, if you don't know, if you hadn't flown lately, business class, I guess, I don't know why, but they quit calling it first class. Business class is now first class. Or first class is now business class. And I said, well, what exactly is that? She said, well, you got a little bigger seat. And now you're in my neighborhood now. She had told me something. And I said, just how much is that? And the difference in the poor man's seat back there, you know, with Jethro and Granny, where you tie yourself in with a rope, and up there in the business class where you got the big seats, it was almost $5,000 a ticket. And I said, ma'am, there's nothing legal or illegal, moral or immoral, you can do for $5,000. Just give me a seat in the back. You know, I'll be good. I said, does the whole plane get there? She said, yes. I said, just get me on the plane then. That's all I want. I'll just ride in the back. If you need me to help gas her up, whatever, just let me know. I'm not paying that much. It was a ridiculous price. I'll tell you a real quick story. And I won't use his name because I don't have permission to use it, but I've heard him tell this story publicly. Doctor here in this area has two sons. And he said one time he heard his sons arguing over who was the most valuable, who meant the most to their parents. One of the sons is adopted. And the natural born son was saying, you know, I'm worth more to mom and daddy than you are. And he said, I heard that. And he said, I need to stop that now, because they were still small. And he said, well, he went in and said, how can we settle this? I know, let's decide how much you cost. So that's a good way to decide who's the most valuable, isn't it? And then, yeah, that's a good idea. And so he said, okay. He said to his natural born son, he said, all right. He said, now when you were born, because I'm a doctor, so-and-so delivered you and he didn't charge me. And because I'm a doctor, the hospital didn't charge. Anyway, lo and behold, his natural born son, some of y'all are going to have a heart attack if you've had youngins. So he says, you cost me $18. He said, now, little, what's his name over here? The adopted one, he said, now he had like a $3,000 legal bill and this and this. He said, so he cost me about $15,000, so I guess he's the most valuable. Said his son. They didn't have that argument never again in their house. I got to be honest with you. With insurance, it's probably the same thing at our house. I bet all three of our kids together didn't cost to be delivered and born what it cost for the plane tickets to go get Tenzin. Price was high, worth every penny, but it was high. I want to tell you something. I'm adopted into the family of God because there was a problem, there was a plan, and he sent his only son to pay the price. You know, it's awful hard for me to wrap my mind around the thought that God would have sent his son to buy me. See, things change dramatically if all of a sudden I go and I talk to the adoption agents and they say, oh yeah, no problem. You can adopt a child from China, but you're going to have to give us one of the ones you already got. Depending on what day it was and which one they wanted. Think about that. God the Father looked at you and said, he's got a problem. I got a plan. And the price is my only son. But I'll pay it. But I'll pay it. The problem, the plan, the price, the position. I can't explain this. I have no understanding of this at all. I just know it happened. Tenzi is my daughter. If you don't believe it, mess with her. You will find out very quickly. To start with, she'll cop an attitude like her mama. The second thing, her daddy will be on your head real quick because she's my baby. She's her mother's daughter. If you don't believe it, mess with Tenzi and you'll see her mother come out in her. She's her brother's sister. If you don't believe it, mess with her. And probably before daddy can get there, her brothers is going to be all over you. Now, Malia would hate to admit it because y'all probably know if you ever had two girls at your house what that's like. Got no idea, do you, Matt? Preaching to the choir, right? But as much as they go at each other, what would happen if somebody messed with one of them? It'd be war. I can't explain. People ask me all the time, say, how'd your kids feel about you adopting another child? I said, they were thrilled to death, because that means now when I die, instead of splitting all the stuff I owe three ways, they split it four. You know, they got, you know, mine are not worried about what they inherit, and they're worried about the bills they're going to have to pay. And now instead of a third, I have a fourth. You know, I cannot explain to you for the life of me. And if you would have asked me 10 years, I would have told you it could never be that way. That I could take a child into my home from another culture, another country, and that she would be like my daughter. She is my daughter. There's no stepdaughter, half-daughter, nothing. I am daddy. She is baby. End of discussion.
She doesn't have to sleep outside. She doesn't get second. Matter of fact, she's the queen. The other three might tell you that she's got elevated. She's jumped ahead of them. I can't explain that to you. I can't explain what took place in my heart. I don't know what that transformation was. All I know is that she is my child. I can't explain to you how through the blood of Jesus Christ that we are able, as Paul says, to be able to look at Him and call Him Abba Father. I'm not a stepchild. The Bible says what? It says I am a joint heir with Christ. I am elevated. I'm not a stepbrother. I'm not a half-brother. I'm not a stepchild. I'm not a distant kin. I'm not a third cousin twice removed. I am His son, and He is my father. And I can't explain that. I can't explain to you the position Tenzi holds in my heart. I know where she came from. I know where we went and got her. I know how all those things. All I can tell you, she is just as much mine as those three that I watched be delivered at Cabarrus Memorial Hospital. I can't explain that to you. But she's mine. And I will, I'm going to tell you something. You take this as a warning, advice, promise, whatever. You have to kill me before you hurt that child. Just like the other three. Well, maybe not the other three. The boys are big enough to tend for themselves now. They're my guardians now. So, but listen, I'll tell you something. I can't explain it. And I can't explain why in the world a God in heaven would look down and say, you know what? I want Tommy to be my child. I don't understand that. But He did. And I don't understand why He'd look down through time and He'd say, oh, big Frank, I want Frank to be my son and bring him into the family. And make him a joint heir with you. You know what it means to be an heir? Everything that Jesus Christ is entitled to, He says, I am a joint heir. A joint heir. See the position. And that just leads me to the promise. We don't leave Tenzi behind when we go on vacation. She's a beneficiary of our life insurance, so she can help pay off the bills. Just like the other ones. She's got the same promise as all our other children. There's no difference. And because she's been adopted into the family, she's entitled to the vast Barrett fortune. Stack of bills this deep. She's entitled to it. She gets her fourth. When she grows up, and she's already practicing. She plays wedding pretty often. See, when she grows up, I'm going to walk her down the aisle. So she's my daughter. When she needs me, I'll be there. When she hurts, I'll do everything in my power to comfort her, just like I would for David or Caleb or Malia. Because they're my children. And because we have been adopted into the family of God, all His promises are mine. All His fortune is mine. I want to tell you something. What I have understood, my change in understanding adoption in these last 8 years. Now, I'm not telling you to go. I'd never thought about it myself. I've told people us going to China and adopting a kid just shows God's got a sense of humor. You know, like we had messed up the first three bad enough, He thought we'd go get another one and give it a whirl. I'm not standing here promoting Chinese adoption. If God tells you to go, go. But I think about this. I told you the mortality rate is 75%, 90% in Shanghai. One of the things that would happen, because we were there about 2 weeks with Tenzi, and we'd have to go out and try to find something that Rhonda would eat. I got a little lower standards. Pretty well throw it down. As long as it was done moving, I'd give it a whirl. The only thing y'all heard about Peking duck?
It ain't all that in a box of Cracker. Matter of fact, I'd rather have a box of Cracker Jacks. I've got to tell you, one of the things when we had Peking duck, they set it on a Lazy Susan in this restaurant, and our guides, they took their chopsticks and they'd spin that around, and they'd just reach out, they'd eat, and they'd reach out and grab some more and just keep, it's like double dipping. And I said, I've had enough. I'm good. Kind of find something to eat was kind of complicated. When you go down the road and they tell you, you say, what is that smell? Oh, that's what they're cooking over there. Yeah, what is it? They just call it stink bread. And that doesn't do it justice. But we'd get out and we'd walk the streets and the Chinese people would see us, Carrie and Tenzi. And the first thing they would do was come and look and make sure you didn't have one of their boys. And then when they realized you had a girl, it happened over and over, somebody would look at you and say, lucky baby. Lucky baby. Because they knew that child, they know the problem. They're aware. They knew that child, that the worst life he could have in America was better than the best life he could have hoped for as an orphan in China. And if a little girl could be adopted by two rednecks, we hadn't been home long, and Jason over there said, I can just see it now. Said, pretty little girl, she's going to be standing on a college campus one day and somebody's going to go, look at that pretty little Asian girl. And they're going to go walking up to her and she's going to go, hey y'all, how you doing? A little Asian girl could be taken in by a family full of rednecks is a lucky girl. How much more blessed are you to be taken in by the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords? How much more fortunate are you to be able to cry out, as Paul writes, Abba, Father, to the Creator, Sustainer of all that is. You hear this morning, you say, Jimmy, I know I'm a Christian. I know I've been adopted. I've been taken into the family of God. When I didn't deserve it, I did nothing on my own. But God Himself looked through time and He looked down and He took me in and He made me His child. I just need to come this morning and I just want to thank Him. I just want to thank Him. Because He didn't have to do that for me. I just want to thank Him. Maybe you're here today and you don't know Christ as your Savior. I want to tell you something. The price has already been paid. The price for your adoption was paid some 2,000 years ago on an old rugged cross where the perfect Son of God hung bleeding and dying. And you've got a problem. The mortality rate in China may be 75%, but the mortality rate in America is 100%. Always has been and always will be. You're going to die one day and you're going to stand before God. Don't stand before Him lost. You can come this morning and ask Jesus Christ into your heart. Come this morning and tell Him you want Him as your personal Savior. You want to be part of His family. He's already paid the price. As we stand together, as our musicians come this morning, Christians need to come. You need to kneel and say, Lord, I just want to thank You for taking me into Your family, for loving me when I was unlovable. I just want to thank You. I was unlovable. I was an orphan.